Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Didn't suit my personality.
you don't like it? Have you ever done a redhead?
I haven't done a redhead.
I can see you like a strawberry blonde or a redhead.
Yeah. That'd be cute. One of my sisters is a redhead. The others are dark haired. And so I'm a blonde. So it just, I'm blonde by nature. It's in my personality.
So. Well, that's
I get away with murder.
Have you ever tried a wig? Have you ever worn a wig?
No, not yet.
Well, they're fun. Not yet. You are such a fun person. You really, really are.
Did you see my purple wig for my Mama Max?
I did see your purple wig and it was cute.
So yeah, she's Mama Max. She's my, the children's book author. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I gotta find a postcard so everybody knows where they are. You know, they know where they are. I don't know where I am though right now. Here we go. I'm on the edge with Karen McDermott from South Australia. She is, when it comes to books and book publishing, this lady is it. And you might want to write her information down right now, because she's going to give us some tips and some tricks on publishing your book, your novel, your memoir, how she got started. I don't know how she had time. She's a mother of six. She is one of six siblings, so six is a lucky number for her. She's got so much going on, and it's 6:30 in the morning there now, and she is up working. So I want her to tell us a little bit about her story and encourage us, and especially as women, how does she do it all and still have rosy cheeks and bright eyes and, you know, a happy life. So welcome, Karen McDermott, to The Edge. How are you?
I am so good, April. Thank you for having me. And hello, brains. It's so lovely to be here with you.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Now, in the green room, we were just chatting it up and I said, nope, we got to stop because I want people to hear your story. So tell us a little bit about, you know, from the beginning. Mm-hmm.
So I'll start from, I have always been very blessed in life. I've always felt very blessed in life, but I did go through a dark period, April. And that was when I went through post-traumatic stress back in 2006, at the end of 2006. And it stayed with me for a year and I didn't like it, but I knew it was happening because I was fortunate enough to have worked in mental health for 4 years. So I worked my way through it, but I stayed in there too long. So, of course, you get the wake-up call, which came with a double...
Let me try to interject there so I can get a clear picture here. You had something traumatic happen to you, and then you went to the PT. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I was always a very optimistic person, so I never expected, you know, it got me. And it happened because I wasn't filling my cup. I was giving all the time and I wasn't stopping to fill my cup. So when this traumatic event happened, I fell lower than I would have done now, you know, where I keep my vibration high. I'm very mindful to keep my cup full first so that I can fill others. And then I had a double miscarriage as well after that. But anybody that goes through post-traumatic stress or knows somebody who goes through post-traumatic stress, you're very numb to feelings. You don't feel anything. You're just going through the motions of life. There's no real purpose. You're just survival mode every day. But when I had a double miscarriage, which was traumatic, and I wanted those babies, and I had already had two boys, so I was like, why me? I'm a healthy, why did this happen to me? And I never got that answer from the medical end. But what happened with that double miscarriage was I woke up and I started to feel again. I cried buckets of tears for them. I cried buckets of tears for the year I'd lost. But life started I started to wake up to life again. I started to have hope again and I started to plan again. And within a month, I was pregnant again. That we got our we had applied for visas to Australia. Our visas came through because I'm from Ireland. So this happened in Ireland and our visas came through. We got married. We moved to Australia that year. I was 35 weeks pregnant with with my daughter, because we didn't have a visa for her. So I waddled my way, 35 weeks pregnant, with my family to Australia, and we knew nobody, we knew nothing, but we had this deep knowing that that was exactly what we were supposed to be doing at that exact time. So with that faith in us, we arrived here, and a bit of a bumpy start, but it was the best thing ever. And that was 13 years ago, April. And so obviously, I books and babies are my life, absolutely. And I started writing for a website called Building Beautiful Bonds, and I was kind of going through a bit of a spiritual awakening. So I'd write articles that were coming up for me, and I was just little 700 word pieces, but they started getting picked up by magazines and things like that. And I was like, well, this is cool. So I just wrote. Then I had a calling, and I was watching The View one day, and Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah, I love the well. It's funny because I had just had my fourth child, and she was 4 weeks old, and I was watching The View. My other ones were playing, and because children's TV was always on in our house, there was never daytime TV on. But this one day, I had The View on, and Whoopi Goldberg and the girls had a celebrity TV couple come in, and they had just endured a miscarriage on their TV show because they were doing a reality show. And I could just connect so much with the woman. And but Whoopi just stopped the show, and she turned her back to the cameras, and she says, "I'm going to tell you something that I tell all my friends that this happens to. This was a visitor that came to tell you to get back onto the right track in life, and when you do, your gift will come." And I was like, "Oh, that was the answer my heart longed for," because I still, and that was 2.5 years after I had had my double miscarriage. And because I never knew why me, why would that happen to me? I'm healthy, all these kinds of things. But I remember it just connected with me because I needed to get off that track that I was on. I was just stuck in PTSD and stuff. And then, but I woke up to life again. So it was a true gift that happened to me. And I shifted immediately, and I got pregnant straight away again. So I was like, I have to tell everyone this. So I wrote a blog, but that wasn't enough. And then, as the universe does, it sends you signs. And it came to my attention that in 2 days' time, there was NaNoWriMo. Have you ever heard of NaNoWriMo ever?
No.
It's National Novel Writing Month. It's based in the US, but it's worldwide now. And this was in 2010. And I had a 4-week-old child, and my other three kids. And I said to my husband, "I'm sorry, dear, but for 30 days, you're not going to have a wife, because the challenge is that for 30 days, you write 1,667 words a day, and you have a 50,000 word novel at the end. And you go and you log every day how many words you write." So I was very focused and very determined. But 2 days before it started, I knew what I was going to write about, but I didn't have any plan or anything. And it was going to be a fictional novel. I don't know why it had to be a fictional novel with my story woven through it. And but I did. I just wrote down 20 potential chapters. I knew it was going to be called The Visitor. And on the first day of November 2010, I sat with missing keys on my keyboard, breastfeeding my daughter, and I would get up at 5 a.m. and I'd start, and I wouldn't stop. Well, I would stop throughout the day and just keep going back to it. But every night I would log 1,667 words. I'd done that for every day for the month of November. And I had my 50,000, I actually wrote 51,000 words by the 30th of November. And it was amazing. That changed my life. That and
I
then the
had
book.
another guest on my show that talked about having 9 miscarriages.
Yeah,
Nine.
it's
And then
really
I had
tough.
another guest on my show that was a post-abortion counselor and coach. And those were some of the most heart-wrenching conversations, as a woman. I've never experienced that, but I can imagine the trauma that you feel, And I
I
mean,
just so wanted them.
I'm like nine, and she kept trying and kept trying. And now she owns one of the most prestigious doula clinics here in California in a very rich part of town. And when I talked to her, she was sleeping in her car. So,
Wow.
life can, give you lemons. And what did you do? You made lemonade. So now you're squeezing the juice out of other people. You just took to another level. You know, you had six kids. Let's talk about the six kids. How old are your children?
My eldest is 24 and my youngest is 5.
It's 5. Okay. Do you plan on having more?
No.
Now you
this is my number. I'm done.
You are one of six as well, correct?
I'm the eldest of six, so I've kind of always been a mom.
So how's the pecking order when it comes to that? You know, each personality is different. How they get along is just, you know, you just have to work with that. That's a lot of personalities. Plus keeping your business and keeping yourself and, you know, your love life, all of that. How do you do all of that? How do you keep all those balls in the air?
I just prioritize what needs to be prioritized at any time. I find that when my eldest son, who's 24 now, he's about to turn 25. He was on his own for 10 years. I had him, it was 10, you know, my next son is 15. So there's 10 years difference between them. So I found one-on-one was more demanding than having six. And I have it more together with six than I did with two. Would you believe it? Because they all just get on with it. And you know, they all have a friend. They all play. Everything you do is kind of collectively. And, you know, it just happens. I don't overthink it. My big thing is unconditional love. I was gifted unconditional love as a child, and I only realized as I grew up that not everybody is given that gift. No. So I just love my kids to death and just be there for them. And that's the thing. And like starting up my business, I'm an accidental publisher, but starting up my business was because I wanted to be present as a mum. I want to drop them off at school. I want to pick them up at school. If they're on a sick day, I want to be there. If they're on, whenever they're on school holidays, I want to be hanging out with them, not putting them in daycare. It's just my choice and what I chose for my life and for them, because they grow up too fast.
Oh, they
do. Know, they just grow up so fast. So that was my choice.
You know, there's so many outside influences, and if you don't have a watchful eye, you know, they can get caught up in the world.
And how, like, I was so blessed and lucky because I was always COVID ready. So when COVID hit, it wasn't a big shock to us, even though we're in Western Australia and we have been relatively, like, of all of COVID, we've only been in lockdown for 7 weeks together. Oh, so no. We're really blessed here. And, but still, you know, just to be able to not have to worry about my business or whatever, I can, you know, I can work from anywhere in the world. And because I found my purpose and my passion because I was an at-home mom, because I had that space to do it. And I just feel so blessed for that. And, now, you know,
I can tell that you are a deep woman of faith because you use the word blessed repeatedly. Mm-hmm. What does the word bless mean to you?
Well, and I do say it, it just means I'm so grateful for what I have, because I know that it's my positive attitude that I'm focusing on all the goodness in my life that brings more goodness my way.
Right.
So I have total faith in that. And I'm not a very holy person, as in religion-wise, but I'm a very spiritual person.
Yeah.
As in, I'm very deeply connected with my own inner source. I know exactly what I write on it now all of the time. People say, how can you be so successful? How can you be a mom of six? How do you do all of this?
Right.
And I'm like, it's life magic. I embrace the magic of life. I cherish it. But I also believe that I'm worthy of the best. And I go for it. I have no fear, because there's no fear in knowing. You know, you set an intention.
You're Irish.
I'm Irish too, yeah.
You know, we have leprechauns.
Exactly.
We have clovers. I mean, you know, we have pots of gold. Are you kidding me? How could you not? How could you not? So now you are this publisher. You writing just wasn't enough. You springboarded into, and I looked at your website. Oh my God, you have some amazing authors and so many books in so many genres. Mm-hmm. How did you get started publishing?
Oh, that was a journey. That was a calling. I call myself an accidental publisher. I've just been really successful at it. And April, I just want to share with you, my studies have not been in publishing. My studies are in humanities. I have, that's what I studied in university, humanities. So I'm always, it's always about doing things for others. I love helping people along in life. It's just, I just love it. I absolutely love doing that. So when I wrote The Visitor, I'm going to share with you, this is The Visitor.
Okay.
When I visit her, which was in 2010, a few people read it. And this woman who had just had a miscarriage read it, and she said, it gave me the answer my heart longed for. And I was like, oh, wow, give me goosebumps. So I was like, okay, we have to get this published. So I signed up and I self-published it with a company in the US. And it wasn't the best experience. It wasn't a personable experience. It wasn't an enjoyable experience. When I had my book in my hands, I was like, wow, was that worth it? My bank account was
in. It was a transaction.
Yeah, it was that. And I was like, wow, this is a heart-centered book I've poured my soul into. I wanted to reach people. I really wanted to reach the hearts of men, but I had this book in my hands and I didn't know how to get it out into the world. I didn't know what to do. I was a new author. So, but at the beginning of this book, the quote I wrote myself at the first thing I ever wrote for this book was, from every negative situation is the potential for a positive outcome. Mm-hmm. So I sat with that for a while. And then I had this real inspired thought that said, goodness, wonder if you could publish a book. Because even as much as the publishing experience felt negative, it actually wasn't, because when you look at it from a different perspective, it was like a training. I was like, I was being mentored. I learned so much about publishing a book through it, because I was so engrossed in every step of the way. And so I changed my perspective on it. I done a little bit of research, and a bit of serendipity came into play, because I researched who the print and distribution channel were. And on that very month, they had opened my publisher had used, and that very month they had opened up an office in Melbourne, Australia. Oh, and I said, okay, I'm going to apply to become a publisher. And if I am accepted as a publisher, I'm going to help stories and people get published in a positive way and focus on it being a positive experience. And, you know, I've been doing this now for 8 full years, you know, real intensively, or nine now, this is my 9th year. But there's something, whenever somebody starts out on their authorship journey, I think because I come from an author's perspective of not having written a book before, I know all aspects. I'm not just a publisher, I'm also an author as well. So I come from the whole vision. So I know the journey, and I know what the self-development journey that comes with it. I have helped over 400 authors get published now. So I can, and every single journey is different. And so I'm as much a support on the journey as I am a publisher of the book, because every author always reach different challenges, and they're always individual for every author. And but every challenge is an opportunity to stop, learn something new, and evolve into it, because writing and publishing a book is an evolutionary process everyone.
You know, I self-published 3 books, you know, but it's not just the writing of the book. It's the writing of the book. It's the editing of the book. It is the cover of the book. It is the content. It's keeping people interested, and the sell through. Now, there's a lot of people that'll say, oh, you know, because I talk to everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
And they'll say to me, oh, you know, I have a book. And I was like, okay, great. What's just the sales on the book? I don't know. Well, now it's a pamphlet, you know, and that you got maybe 1,000 books that you printed. They're sitting there looking at you. The sale through. I think, number one, I want to know, what is the responsibility of a publisher? Really, what are your, you know, top 3-4 functions? And then also the sale through, and to keep the momentum, because people lose momentum. They're writing their second book, they're writing their third book, and they haven't sold 100 of the first book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So answer that for me. What is your role and responsibility as a publisher?
Absolutely. Well, there's different roles and responsibilities for me personally as a publisher. Obviously, I'm not a big five, you know. We don't have banks and banks of money to put behind books. But what we do is, I own a traditional press, and Serenity Press is my traditional press, where we give contracts out, and, you know, we fulfill all of the costs of production, and we put it out there with marketing budget behind it. So that's Serenity Press. But with KMD Books, which is for my thought leaders and for all of that, you know, all of those kind of business owners, all of, you know, all of those kinds of non-fiction books, they're self-funded by the authors, and it depends on what they choose. And we have different levels. So if you want to put a big marketing budget behind it, you want to help get, you know, get the sales out there. But what we do is we align with the intentions of the author, and we have that happen. Like, for example, one of our authors had a dream of being on Big W shelves. And so she's what's the goal? What does the author want? What's the objective? If you want to sell a lot of books and you're a new author, well, you've got to start building up a readership platform. That's where your energy should go, you know, and things like that. So there's lots of different aspects that we work with. So with traditional publishing, we're responsible for a lot, but a lot of it's a partnership. You know, if you're an author that's not going to be proactive, then you're not, it's the author that fuels the author's the driver there, you know.
It's your baby, you know, you're giving birth to this project. And so even if it comes out ugly, you can't get rid of it. It's still your baby. It's still your body of work.
And the launch of a book is just the birth of the book. You still got to nurture it and grow it up and get it out there into the world. And that's what I think a lot of people, you know, there's so much focus on the journey of getting it published and getting it out into the world, but that's only the beginning, you know, that's only the beginning.
That's just the beginning. They have no idea. And longevity, you know, I sold a couple of my books the other day and I told myself, if they're still selling the Bible and the Torah, I'm going to sell mine till I die. And it's brand new to the person who's never read it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
There are books that are timeless, that, you know, having characters that people follow and get invested in. And you never know. A lot of books have turned into plays. They turn into scripts. They turn into television shows. Some books, like some of mine, have turned into song lyrics.
Oh, beautiful.
You know, so there's a lot to it and there's a lot that you can do with it. And it's a lot of fun. Speaking of fun, you're a pretty fun gal. I mean, you do. I look at how you introduce your authors when they release a new book. I've been watching. You have such a bubbly personality. You are front line with them. It's not like you've passed them on to your staff, because you could, you know. You don't, you're there with them, you're taking the photo, you're helping them launch their book. I mean, you give them service from cradle to grave, and I commend you for that. That's beautiful.
Thank you so much. I love it. This is where my genius is, what I love to do. And then my team is very, you know, they're amazing at the whole, you know, doing everything behind the scenes. You know, whenever you start out in a business, you're doing everything yourself. And then as you grow, then you get your team to, you delegate the things that you don't love doing so much. And then you stay in your genius zone. Well, connecting with authors and helping them shine is what I love to do. And do you know what, April? Life is an adventure. It's there to be lived. It's there to be embraced. And it's there to do the things that bring you joy. Because why would you not? And when you do that, you're not only a beacon of light, you're not only shining yourself, you're a beacon of light for others. And, you know, if I achieve something, I'm sharing it, because it might inspire somebody. It might show them that they can do something. It might give them a resource to follow up with. Like if somebody's watching this interview that's in my network, if they want to get interviewed by you, well, reach out. If you feel you're a good fit, reach out to April, you know, because to have these conversations and to get featured and to share your story with the brands, you know, like how cool is that?
Exactly. You know? But it's the backstory too, you know, their writing process, their thought process. What were they thinking? What were you going through? And you were going through a very, very tender time. And instead of turning that, you know, that pain into something that manifests inside of you, you turned it into a payday. And that is brilliant. You know, and that really, really works. Are your children, have you found the writing bug in any of your children? Do they like that?
Well, my kids just think that writing and publishing books is just part of life. They all have their own little books and stuff. But when we see my eldest son has written a very complex novel, like a Game of Thrones, and he's built the whole world out. But he hasn't told anybody that. And so I shouldn't probably say that, but he's working hard on that. But he's also in publishing now. He works for me full time, and he's studying books and publishing at university as well. So it's wonderful he's caught the bug, and it is a bug. It's like you catch the writing and publishing bug,
because you can. What happened with Harry Potter? You know, she's been looking at a coffee shop. and just it just turned her life around.
Yeah,
and it can.
Well, that's the thing. I could have chose to stay in. I could have chose to be defined by that trauma that happened to me for the rest of my life, but I chose no. This isn't. I'm choosing no. I'm going to turn it around and change my perspective on it and use it as a strength. And it is a strength. And that's, you know, like, that's why I'm so passionate about mental health. And I'm so passionate about sharing stories with the world, is because when we share stories, we connect with the heart of somebody else and help them along. And when a story connects with someone when they need it, when, you know, there's magic happens, you know, there's something that's just amazing happens. And so more stories need to be told.
That's what people are doing right now. They're really investing in emotional intelligence and they're building their relationship capital. It's not about getting to the six figures brains. You know, that's great. But there's some people out there that are trying to get through the next 6 hours, you know, and what can help them is a good book or a good journal. Journaling is key. You know, I'm not like I was. I was, you know, I was one that would grab that journal every night. Now I'd grab it, you know, once a week. But to go back and to look at who you were and to look at how you've grown and you've developed or your new upcoming struggles and challenges, it's great. So it's very, very cathartic. It's very, very therapeutic. What three tips would you give a person if they are wanting to write a book? What would be your first three suggestions?
So, yeah, absolutely. Whenever, it depends what you want to write on. If you are writing a nonfiction or a self-help, then work in the framework, you know, write about what you know about, you know, what are you passionate about? Because that helps it steam along. So when I'm writing nonfiction and, you know, I get my framework right, but I'm not so rigid with it, but it gives me the framework to start to get it started. When you're writing your story, be really kind to yourself, because there's going to be the residue of emotions that are there that maybe you have pinned down. Because remember, when we go through something in our lifetime, and if we're sharing a story about it, it's going to bring it back up to the surface. But that's not an opportunity for you to bed it down again. It's an opportunity for you to release it out into the world, be free of it. And oh my God, is that not the most therapeutic thing you will ever do in your lifetime? I talk to so many people about this, because when you go through a hard time or trauma in your life, your body goes into survival mode, so it buries down some things so that you can get through it. But you need to then kind of, whenever you're well again and when the call comes to release it, because you need to process it and release it out into the world and be free of it, and honor it and forgive where forgiveness needs to happen and all of those kinds of things. And I think that a lot of people forget to do that. So they carry around a lot of things they don't need to carry around for a lifetime. But when the opportunity comes to share your story with the world, share it. Even if it's just for yourself to get it out onto paper, do it. And as for fiction and novels, well, I have fun writing fiction. I'm not a literary, you know, if you read my novels, they're not literary fiction, if you know what I mean. I was not very good at English in school and things like that, but there's power in my books, and very spiritual, you know, messages and wisdom woven through them. So I love how they're written and the characters connect. But my characters, I can identify with real people in my life. So it helped me to develop the characters, because I kind of knew who they were and their personas, you know, when they were embedded in the book. So that helps whenever you write about things that you know about. It just gives you more confidence to get the words on page. And your first draft is your first draft. Don't overthink it. Just get it out. Let it flow. And that's one of the wonderful things that happened for me for NaNoWriMo. They did just say, just write it out. Write it out. Don't stop. Just keep writing for 30 days. Get that first draft out. And then you have something to work with. You know, your first draft's not your final draft. You will have to go over it. But don't think about that. Get it out. Get what needs, and keep that channel open, because you will be surprised what comes out onto that page. You'll be like, what? Did I write that?
You know, work with your editor, because your editor sometimes doesn't know your voice. That's like me. Mm-hmm. You know, some of my poems have, you know, cliches or some slang terms or whatever. Don't correct that, because it takes away. So have a working relationship with your editor. Don't just expect for them to dot your I's, cross your T's, and put in the comma, but actually let them know your voice and speak to who you are and what you do. Last question I want to ask is, again, about the sell through, because that's what, you know, people do. They want to sell their book. In this time of COVID, you know, here, especially in the United States, there's not the book signing. You know, people are excited about going on the book tour. They're not doing that. You know, some virtual book tours. I tell them you can still have a book signing. You can have them pre-purchase your book. My books are all over the world. And how I got that is, as I travel, I always take a book and I donate it to the library. Mm-hmm. Whatever language they're speaking, when they pull up their international rolls for poetry, voila, there I am. Can you have some tips for sail through?
Be visible. Be visible and have conversations in where your readers are, you know, where your readers are. Like for poetry, you know, a lot of people will know someone who you know, it's more universal. But if you have, if you've written a romance novel, be where the other romance novelists are, but also think outside of the box. You know, and I've got everywhere in my life by thinking outside of the box, getting innovative, like get your book to someone who can make it visible, have a conversation with someone, and just be, you know, just thinking bigger than what you are right now, and have fun. Be visible online. Like we have used to do lots of events, and we're lucky that here in Western Australia we can still have book launches. Mm-hmm. But a book launch is a very, it's a location dependent thing, right? And yes, you can go on tour or whatever, but whenever you're doing it online, you can have more of an impact actually. And if you have fun with it and have fun engaging conversations and make it fun and think outside of the box, like how can you get the, you know, for example, one of the things that we do is audio flipbooks. So we have partnered with Flipsnack and we do a flipbook. So it's like an instant reading a book experience. So it feels like you're reading a book on an iPad. And then, and if it's a children's book or even some novels, or especially our fairy tale books, we get the author to read it. So then we put the audio over it. So if somebody wants to listen, so we, you know, get innovative with what you can offer your audience, but engage, and have fun with it, because people want more. People want to be in the energy of something that's high vibrational. So be that beacon.
You know what else is really popular now? The novelettes. Novelettes? Is it novelettes or novelettes?
Yeah, novelettes. I love writing novelettes.
You don't?
I do. Yeah, I love writing them. I've written
them. They are small, quick reads, but I tell you, they are perfect for a plane ride, a train ride, just an afternoon with a sandwich out at the park or at the beach. And they are going, you know, at these drugstores like here, like the Walmart and the CVS, they're flying off the shelves.
Yeah, they're short reads for busy people as well. And that's the thing. And they just give you that little snippet. And even for me, they keep my readers engaged when they're waiting for a bigger book. You know what I mean? So a novelette is around 10,000 words. Mine are, but it's anything up to 15,000. So there's a novelette, novella, and then a novel. So that's the three stages. So yeah.
And now audiobooks. Mm-hmm. I think that they are wonderful. I know President Obama wrote a 700-page, I don't have time to sit there and be patient with you. I had to get it on audio. What do you think about audiobooks? And do you, well, I guess it depends on the individual. Do you think that the actual author should read it, or maybe they should have someone else? But again, it depends on their voice inflection and how they feel about, you know, delivering it audibly.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few, I've had this discussion before, and it's interesting that a lot of people have views on this. So, I love audiobooks. I listen, but I like to have a physical book and an audiobook. I like both because I like those moments sitting down on the sofa with a cuppa and just really engrossing in it. Because I do a lot of digital work, so I'm on laptops and I'm on things a lot during the day, so I like to, you know, have the book. But listen, an audio is wonderful for when I'm driving around, and I listen, you know, or if I'm waiting, I just listen to audio. So that's what I do with that. But I if you have a readership, you know, especially in nonfiction arena, I think that it's more impactful when the author reads it, but to have some training on how to deliver it, I think, you know, you just don't rack up and just spew it out. I think that it's important that you deliver a professional audiobook in a studio and that you take time to, you know, to read it properly. And you know, like, for example, a lot of my authors at KMD Books, their audiobooks, their audience wants them to read them. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So, but for fictional novels, I think a narrator is better.
Hmm. Well, you are amazing, and you've given us so much insight, you know, personally, spiritually, professionally, and audibly. So I love it, and thank you so much. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you, because I know that there's a lot of books out there that need to be written. And, you know, there's a vetting process, Brains. Now, let's not just think because you call her that she's just going to scoop you up. You know, there's a standard that she is looking for. She's looking for someone that is going to be serious, that is going to cross promote, that is going to do the work. You don't just dump, you know, 10,000 pages of text on her and expect for her to do the work. You've got to be a buy-in, because, again, this is the baby that you're giving birth to. So how do they get in contact with you, Karen?
Yes, you will find me at kmdbooks.com, and also LinkedIn and Facebook. I'm very active on there. So you'll find me, and we can have a conversation, see if you're a good fit.
Absolutely, because you know what? If the shoe don't fit, don't force it. But there's options, you know, and Karen seems like she's real cool that if it doesn't necessarily work for her publishing, maybe she should give you some direction on self-publishing. You know, again, it never hurts to have a conversation. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me here on The Edge and My Brains. I appreciate you. I value you. And again, if you are looking for promotion, if you want to have a conversation about your book, please subscribe to everything that I have. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. But I'd love to have a conversation with you too, because that's what we do. We're communicators. Thank you, Karen. I love you.
My pleasure. Bye, Brains.
Bye, Brains.
Thanks, April.